Now it's on. Now it's not. No, it's not. It's not. It's loose. It's not staying on. It's not on. It's on now. No. It's not. It's too loose. It's falling right out. Okay. No, it's not a good connection. Okay. Okay, where are we? I guess we moved into the next one. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. We are discussing how Srimad Bhagavatam is super excellent among scriptures because it attracts or even captures the Supreme Lord. Okay. 94.3. Yata eva sau. Tadeka tatparya tvena nimatsaradna palakamukasyeva parodkarsh asanam matsadas tadrahitanam eva. This kind of religious principle, aiming only at that goal of pleasing the Supreme Lord, excludes all cheating because it is enjoined for those who are non-envious, who lack envy, who lack intolerance of another's excellence, as is found in someone who is greedy for profit. That's a definition of matsara, envy. is not tolerating someone else's excellence. Tad upalakshanatvena pashvalambane dayalunam evacha satam swadharma parana eva vidyate iti.
Furthermore,
as this only partial indication implies, it is enjoined also for those who are compassionate in the matter of sacrificing animals. Or in other words, for saintly persons dedicated in carrying out their prescribed duties. Matsara can also mean violent. So people who are non-violent, who don't kill animals and sacrifice. Ajiva Swami takes that as equivalent to being a saintly person dedicated to actually carrying out your prescribed duties. Evam idrisham spashtam. Because killing animals is not necessary. There's no injunction that you have to kill animals and sacrifice. It's a kamya yagya. You want something, and therefore the injunction is, if you want such and such, kill an animal. But there's no injunction that a Brahmin has to kill the animals. It's only because he has material desires that he needs to kill the animals to get that desire. Those who are actually selfless, who are actually interested only in other people's welfare, they're non-violent. And therefore they're called Yamatsara. People who are selfless. Evam idrisham spashtam anuttavata karma shastrad upasana shastrad chasya tat-tat pratipadakam shepi shraishtyam uktam umayatraiva dharmot patteve. Thus this Bhagavatam is superior to the scriptures teaching food and work and formal worship. Karma kanda upasana kanda. Thus, and these scriptures that teach karma and upasana do not speak on this matter so explicitly. Even in the portions of the Bhagavatam which discuss material work and formal worship, since in both kinds of discussions, the Bhagavatam promotes the highest religious principles. Okay, what am I saying here? Although the Bhagavatam speak on this matter so explicitly. I think we're talking about the Bhagavatam doesn't say so much about karma and upasana, about ritual worship and material duties, although it says something. There are a few places in the Bhagavatam where Diti is told how to do a certain ritual and Antiti is told another one. But actually those rituals are directly connected with Nam Sankirtan. And there's some other places where karma is prescribed. You know, Varnashram Dharmas are discussed a little bit by Narada Muni. But again, very closely in connection with pure Krishna consciousness. So there's not so much explicit discussion of karma or upasana in the Bhagavatam. Even those portions, even in the portions of the Bhagavatam which discuss material work. Even in the portions of the Bhagavatam which discuss material work and formal worship, even there, it really doesn't get too much into these topics, the Bhagavatam. Since in both these kinds of discussions, the Bhagavatam promotes the highest religious principles. Pure Krishna consciousness is what's being promoted, even when there's apparent discussion of lesser matters in the Bhagavatam. Evam Idrisham, and that's said in the words, well, it's not said in this verse. Tadevam Sati, Sakshad Shravana Kirtanadi Rupasya Varta, Tudurata Ev Astam Iti Bhavaha. Since such being the case, then certainly it is implied, nothing else can compare to the Bhagavatam's direct instructions on hearing and chanting about the Supreme Lord. Even when the Bhagavatam is talking about apparently material topics, it always is focusing on pure Krishna consciousness. What to speak then of when the Bhagavatam is describing and glorifying the actual processes of hearing and chanting about the Supreme Lord? Then that's the best presentation. No other scripture can present pure devotional service like the Bhagavatam does. Now we have a commentary. Because the pursuit of selfish goals involves competition with others, all who are not pure devotees of the Lord suffer from the contamination of envy. Only in Shuddha Bhakti is there no selfish competition. Every human being, without exception, can succeed in bhakti and become completely satisfied. The practitioners of pure bhakti are non-violent, even to animals. They do not like to kill animals, even in the name of Vedic sacrifice. Content with simply doing their own duty for the pleasure and glory of God, they do not covet the privileges of others. If you want to get ahead materially, you have to be violent. You have to do harm to others. Devotees don't want to do that. Pure devotees. The scriptures of ritual worship, upasana, or karma, I'm sorry, ritual worship is karma, and meditational worship is upasana. The Upanishads describe upasanas. These are meditations, but devotional meditations. Some of them are impersonal, some of them are more personal, but they're ways of focusing the mind on the Supreme. So they're, you can translate it as worship, but it's worship in the form of mental exercise, meditation. That is what upasana is. There's a difference between karma and upasana. Karma is the ritual offerings, and upasana is the mental concentration on the Supreme. So there are different parts of the Vedas that talk about, promote karma, the rituals, and other portions, especially the Upanishads, that promote the upasanas, the meditations. The scriptures of ritual worship, karma, and meditational worship, upasana, may vaguely promote relative forms of selfishness. But these, I think it's selflessness. Yeah, I meant to say self. They may vaguely promote relative forms of selflessness. But these versions of Bhagavad Dharma, service to the Supreme Lord, are not pure or complete. Only the pure Bhagavad Dharma taught by Srimad Bhagavatam is the uncompromised Dharma that evokes the full potential of human life. The sadhanas leading to the accomplishment of the aims of this real Bhagavad Dharma are hearing and chanting about the Supreme Lord, remembering Him, His activities and His devotees, and personal service to Him and His devotees. Okay, any comments? Yes, serving Him for whom?
You mentioned about the study in the beginning. One of the things which is the youth, and we know that the government find to feel ignorance in the sacrifice. And sometimes, for example, when you have to think the others are like truly creative or wrong for the other, they want to feel the same way. Like, can you consider it to be a book of study about them? Because of how they are looking at the welfare of all this.
Well, yes, that's true. You may argue that these big sacrifices are sometimes performed for the welfare of everybody. Like Yudhishthira performed the Rajasiya sacrifice. That included killing a horse and other animals in the sacrifice. And Yudhishthira was not selfishly motivated. But that's exceptional. Here we're arguing radically that in general, this ritual worship is selfish, generally. Even if there's promotion of selflessness, it's incomplete. It's not full selflessness. With exceptions, with individual exceptions of people doing these things, but the processes themselves generally encourage selfishness, sort of elevated selfishness. Real pure devotees generally are disinclined to do any violence. Sometimes they have to, it's their duty sometimes, but they don't like to do it. To kill an animal in a sacrifice or to kill another human being in a war or otherwise, they don't like to do it, but sometimes it's their duty. Yes?
After all, the Shogun is speaking about the material world. You can see at the end of two chapters, this big bit of the time the shepherd for power speaking. And the fourth temple, you know, have to look at the case that before the same is past time for your father or people of Raja, you will get the same benefit to the case, you will give paper more time. So how to take this power speaking, this sentence, which you give it, which you have.
I didn't really understand.
But you know that you have many at the end of the chapter, you have this whole power of beauty.
Yeah.
Yes. If you study the chapter, you will get a good point and you get a good point.
Yes.
And you will be taken for all the time. So,
yeah. So, well.
For the thing, because one example, one of the ones in my temple, he ate this bit and he thought, okay, it is very nice. It's exactly what they want.
It's like a test. It's like a test. Do you want some material profit? You can have it. You know, hearing and chanting the Bhagavatam will give you fulfillment of material desires if you're so foolish that that's what you want. So the statements are not false. You can get these material things on the strength of hearing the Bhagavatam. But it's a test. Is that what you want? Okay, take it. You're dismissed. And you miss the chance to get the real benefit of hearing all the time. It's a test at the end of the chapter. Is this what you want? Then why are you wasting your time? Go take it and go somewhere else. Yes. Although it's not, you know, but it's not saying that Bhagavatam is the desire tree, but it's the ripened fruit of the tree. So it's, you know, the fruit at the top of the tree. Those who want material things, really the Bhagavatam is not the place for them to go. But you know, we get all sorts of people coming to the Bhagavatam anyway. So to test who's a real student of the Bhagavatam and who isn't, sometimes these things are offered. Like similarly, Shukadev described lesser processes at the beginning of the second canto to test Parikshit. And in the beginning of the sixth canto, again, it was a midterm exam, you know, about Prayaschita and Jnana. And Parikshit passed the test. He said, no, this is not the real thing. It was a test. Yes. 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 Thank you. Yeah. Parvati Prabhu.
Question. It's said that Krishna doesn't give what you want, but he gives what you need.
Yes.
So similarly, Bhagavatam, anybody can go to Bhagavatam with any kind of motives, but Bhagavatam may purify and they get him on right track. Like there is one doctor in Udupi, like who gives Ayurvedic medicines. But also in case, so you read Dhruva Maharaj Chaitre, you read Dhruva Maharaj Bhaskar. So it's like giving medicine as well as he gives Bhagavatam chapter to read.
Yes.
So it's like, so, and what if he said by reading, he will also be purified.
Yes.
Even though they are taking this process for the body, but the their heart also will be purified.
Yes. There's a chance that the person who is approaching the Bhagavatam for material purposes, he may be so infected by the spirit of the Bhagavatam that he forgets his material purposes. So therefore Bhagavatam is not forbidden to materialists. In fact, the saying is moksha kriya, akama sarvakamova. You can go ahead and worship Lord Vishnu even if you're full of material desires. But if after getting that chance you don't give up your material desires, then you're a fool. You know, if you just use the Bhagavatam for material purposes and don't recognize the greatness of what the Bhagavatam is offering, then you're very unfortunate. Yeah, if you hear from a materialist, what are you going to gain? If you hear from a materialist, you won't imbibe the true understanding and spirit of the Bhagavatam. But it's better than not hearing. Better than no hearing is to hear from a materialist. It is better than no hearing. No? Yeah, okay. If someone's a total atheist or a total Mayavadi, then yeah, that is poison to hear Bhagavatam. But what you have is people who are sort of mixed. They're devoted, but they're also materialistic. They're devoted, they're also a little bit Mayavadi. We don't want to hear from anybody who's at all Mayavadi. Sometimes we hear from someone who's a little materialistic, you know, if he's still a serious devotee. It's because sometimes you get mixed devotees, especially those who get involved in the preaching business, sometimes their motives are mixed. So, but it's still some benefit that they're getting and their hearers are getting. As long as they're not total atheists and total Mayavadis. Okay, well that, now you're talking about the temple program. The most important services should be done by the best devotees. Serving Prasadam should be done by good devotees, not by neophytes. And giving Bhagavatam class also better to get your best people to do it. Does it make sense? Yeah. To get the most benefit, use the best people. Okay, we're going to move on. We're starting to get a little off track. Next paragraph. Atta Gyanakant. So we were talking about the Bhagavatam being superior to the scriptures that teach karma and upasana. Now, the scriptures that teach jnana in comparison to the Bhagavatam. Atta Gyanakanda Shastra Vyopi Asya Purvava Shraishtyam Aha Vedyam Iti. These are all the words of the second verse. Vedyam Vastavavat Vyvastu. So it also, In comparison to the scriptures of the Gyana Kanda, the Bhagavatam is superior in the same way as before. This is stated in the words beginning Vedyam. Bhagavad Bhakti Nirapeksha Prayeshu Teshu Pratipaditam Api Shreya Sviti Bhakti Mudasya Ityadi Nyayena Vedyam Nishtayam Nabhavati Ityartriva Vedyam Ityartaha. What is taught in these Gyana Kanda scriptures, which are for the most part negligent of devotional service to the personality of Godhead, is not knowable. It's not ascertained in certainty. This follows the logic of the statement beginning, those who abandon the real path of auspicious devotional service, what do they obtain? They just get the benefit of their severe endeavor. Just like someone who is trying to get something from rice that's already been husked. You're taking the dry, empty husks and further winnowing them. There's nothing left inside. So like that, this dry knowledge is not going to give you the real knowledge of devotional service. Here in the Bhagavatam, however, what is taught is knowable. It's something worth knowing. Let me change knowable to worth knowing. How's that? That's another meaning of Vedya. Tatmataika Deshi Shastri Bhyo Vaishishtyam Aha Shivam Surupam Paramanandam Dadati Anubhavayati Titata. How the Bhagavatam is superior to the scriptures of those who adhere to one particular philosophy of the Gyana Kanda is stated. We'll have to see what particular philosophy of the Gyana Kanda we're talking about. Maybe the commentary will tell us. How the Bhagavatam is superior to those philosophers, to the philosophy of those thinkers, is stated. The Bhagavatam gives or causes one to experience the auspiciousness, the real supreme blissful identity of the self, and it uproots the threefold torments. Tapatrayam Ulmulayati Tanmula Buddha Vidya Paryantam Pandayatiti Tata. It uproots, it completely eradicates, it uproots the three torments, meaning that it eradicates them completely, up to and including the ignorance that is their root cause. Anyatra Muktav Anubhavamane Yapurushartha Tvapatapsya Iti tan manunat atra tu vaishishtyam iti. When in other texts, personal experience of liberation is not acknowledged, liberation ceases to be a useful goal of life. Thus another superior feature of this Bhagavatam is that in it such experience is acknowledged. Yeah. Other texts teach about liberation and don't tell you that there's personal life after liberation. Bhagavatam tells you about that. Commentary. The Gyana Kanda is comprised of those parts of the Vedas, just like in Vedanta Sutra. There's not much discussion about what happens after liberation. What actually happens to a liberated soul is not discussed most in Vedanta. It just goes up to the point of liberation. But Bhagavatam tells you about the life after liberation. The Gyana Khanda is comprised of those parts of the Vedas which reveal spiritual knowledge of the Supreme. Such teachings are found scattered in various places, but especially in the Upanishads. Some of the Upanishads talk of the Supreme as a person and inform their readers of the ways to practice his devotional service, some of the Upanishads, but only on the level of Gyana Mishra Bhakti. Devotion mixed with interest in enlightenment for the purpose of liberation. Srimad Bhagavatam also gives divine knowledge to its students, perfect knowledge meant to support their efforts for pure bhakti. Therefore, those who have gained entrance to the path of bhakti are most foolish, most unfortunate, if they exchange their bhakti for mere jnana. Exchanging their opportunities for eternal life and blissful devotional service for the miserable existence of dry scholars and speculators. Prominent among the adherents of the Upanishadic canon are the Mayavadin personalists, following Shankaracharya. They're the one school of the Gyanis, the Mayavadins. Their scriptures are the Upanishads, as explained by Shankara. Shankara's own books and those of his disciplic descendants. That's the Shastras of the Mayavadis. For them, the perfection of life is to achieve liberation from duality. But in their liberation, there is only a dim kind of conscious experience, awareness that supposedly has no subject who knows, or object that is known. Okay, comments, questions?
The Vedya, which refers to the Navagraha scriptures, is meant to devotional service? What is the Vedya of the Navagraha scriptures?
Where do we refer to the Vedya of the Navagraha scriptures?
I want to understand these first three lines. So also in the comparison to the scriptures of Navagraha, the Bhagavad.
Well, we're saying that what the Gyana Khanda scriptures is not Vedya, but the Bhagavatam teaches especially Vedya. What other scriptures teach is not Vedya. And I'm translating now, I changed the translation. I made a new translation. Now I'm translating it as worth knowing. What the Gyana Khanda scriptures teach is not worth knowing. I can't say it doesn't teach anything to know, but what it teaches to know is not worth knowing. That's another meaning of the suffix, yeah. I know, I changed it. It's not there anymore. Cross it out. It's not knowable anymore. It's knowable, not. Something's knowable, but it's not worth knowing.
Okay.
Yes?
Second question, how Bhagavatam is, I'm reading the translation, how the Bhagavatam is superior to the scripture of the Rosh Hashanah, etc.
So that means the Mayavadis.
Yeah, he stated. So there is the following three sentences.
Especially the following sentence.
Okay.
Bhagavatam does these things. It uproots the miseries and gives real happiness.
Okay. In the following three sentences, it causes the auspicious, the real supreme invisible identity of the self. That seems like
the Bhagavatam teaches you who you really are. The Mayavadi scriptures don't do that. You can't be really happy until you know who you really are.
In relation to Krishna?
Well, in relation to anything, in general. If you don't know what the purpose of your life is, then how can you fulfill that purpose and become happy? You'll be happy when you get what you need, but you have to know what you need. You have to know what your requirements are. So you have to know who you are to know what your requirements are. Fulfill those requirements, you'll be happy. In general. But the Mayavadis can't really do that. They can't tell you who you really are, they can't tell you what you really need, and therefore they can't really make you happy.
Because we say that they also understand we are not the body, we are the soul.
That's not good enough. that's not good enough to become happy. You can avoid a lot of misery. You can negate a lot of misery by knowing you're not this body. But it's not a permanent solution. This is dealing with the symptoms. It's not going to the root of the disease. All right. Okay. We're looking from a higher point of view. Their so-called pleasure, this vidya vilasa, this pleasure of education, it's just misery from the higher point of view. So-called pleasure. If it's not connected with Krishna, it's miserable, whatever it is. Okay.
The statement of auspicious, real, supreme, blissful identity of the self, that refers to which one of the Dharma projects of
Shiva? Shiva is auspiciousness. Giving auspiciousness, Shiva. Yeah, and then what is auspiciousness? Auspiciousness is supreme happiness. Anything less than supreme happiness doesn't really count as auspicious. Yeah.
You see, the Jiva Swami is trying to make a first of the paragraph, he's saying that how Bhagavatam is only worth money. And in the second part of the paragraph, he's giving the reasons for it. That is a lot of
this. Yeah. He's being a little specific and showing how it's superior. In what way is it superior? Because Bhagavatam does this, the Gana scripture can't do that. It does what the other scripture can't do, so it's superior. Okay, we go on. Nachasya tatta durlabha vastu sadhanatve tadrusha nirumana shaushtavam eva karanam api tu swarupam api ityaha Srimad Bhagavate iti. Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite. We're on to the third line now. Nor is the Bhagavatam's fluency in making such descriptions the only reason for its effectiveness for achieving what is obtainable by these other scriptures. Not just because the Bhagavatam is effective or it says things nicely, it says the right things. No, the Bhagavatam is superior for even another reason. Rather, the Bhagavatam is also effective because of what it is, in essence. Not only what it does, but what it is. What does that mean? This is expressed by calling it the opulent Bhagavatam. It's not the Bhagavatam is not just valuable for what it does for you. It's not just something to be exploited. The Bhagavatam is valuable in its own right. You don't just use the Bhagavatam to get something else. So, Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Bhagavatam, you know, you want to get some asset. You can use the Bhagavatam to get the money or the fame or the this or that you want. The Bhagavatam itself is the most valuable asset. You should want the Bhagavatam, forget about everything else.
Srimad,
opulent. This is the real treasure. Sri Bhagavatam, Sri Bhagavatatvam. No, Bhagavatatvam. Bhagavat Pratipadakatvam. Srimatvam. See, it's Srimad Bhagavat. So there's two adjectives there, Srimad and Bhagavat. So it's Bhagavatatvam. It's connected with Bhagavat. Or here it says Bhagavat Pratipadakam. It reveals Bhagavat. And it's Srimad. Srimatvam Sri Bhagavat Nama Dir Eva Tadrisha Swabhavika Shakti Matvam. To be Sri Bhagavatam, or to be Srimad Bhagavatam, what does that mean? It means to present the personality of Godhead. To be Bhagavatam means to present the personality of Godhead. And to be Srimad, being opulent, means being naturally full of potency, such as possessed by the personality of Godhead's names and other features. His names have special potency. Everything about him has this special potency, not different from him. Bhagavatam also has that potency. Therefore, it's called Srimad. It has the potencies that the Lord himself has. Nitri Yogi Matuk. Here the suffix Matuk, or Vat, indicates permanent connection. It doesn't always indicate permanent connection, but here it means not that it has it temporarily, it always has these opulences. It's Srimad, eternally having these opulences, this power. Ata eva samasta tayaiva nirdishya nilopaladi vat tat nama tvam eva bodhita. We understand thus that Srimad Bhagavate indicates the name of the book by way of a compound construction. It's important that the name of the book is a compound, because you have to understand it not just as Bhagavatam, but as Srimad Bhagavatam. As in compound words like Nilopala, the name blue lotus refers to a special flower. It's different than a white lotus or a red lotus, something special about it. So Srimad Bhagavatam is different from some other Bhagavatam. It's special Bhagavatam. Anyata tvavan vishna videyamshita doshat syat. If it were otherwise, the fault would be committed of assigning a predicate to an undefined subject. Okay, what does that mean? You're supposed to state the subject first, know what your subject is, and then say something about it, the predicate. The predicate comes before the subject, then it's confusing. You don't know what the subject predicate belongs to, what it's about. You have to say what it's about first. So what does that have to do with the compound word Srimad Bhagavat? We'll see. Therefore, ata eva uktam Sri Garude granto stadasya sahasa Srimad Bhagavat abhidaha iti tika krit birapi Srimad Bhagavat abhida suraturu iti. Therefore, when the book is named in the Sri Guru Purana, it's said, that book comprising 18,000 verses is named Srimad Bhagavatam, the whole compound. And the commentator Sridhar Swami says, the celestial desire tree named Srimad Bhagavatam. Ata kvachit kevala bhagavatapyatvam tu satya bhama bhama iti vat. So when it is called simply Bhagavatam, that is like the situation when Satyabhama is called just Bhama. Her name is not just Bhama. But sometimes, out of familiarity, or for some other reason, she's called Bhama. For those who understand who she really is, what her real name is, she might sometimes be called Bhama, in poetry or somewhere. Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam may be sometimes called just Bhagavatam, but the proper name is Srimad Bhagavatam. And if we don't have the whole name, then we're committing the error of stating the predicate without first defining the subject. Let's see what the commentary says about that. The vastavavatru, vastu, substantial reality offered by the Srimad Bhagavatam is Bhagavan and Bhagavad Bhakti. This reality of the Supreme Lord and his devotional service is almost impossible to discover in the lesser scriptures of Karma, Gana, and Upasana. The Bhagavatam not only describes Bhagavan in the most effective ways, but it is also intimately connected with him. Studying the Bhagavatam is itself Bhagavad Bhakti. Like the devotees of Bhagavan, the Bhagavatam emanates love for him. Any contact with the Bhagavatam can result in infection with pure bhakti. And the Bhagavatam is itself a very special form of Bhagavan himself, his incarnation in sound. Similar to the Supreme Lord's transcendental names, the descriptions in Srimad Bhagavatam of his qualities, paraphernalia and entourage, are potent udipanas, awakening pure bhakti in the hearts of the Lord's devotees. The prefix Srimad. What is it?
Third line from below, first paragraph, similar to or similarly?
Oh, the names serve as udipanas. Okay. You hear Krishna's names, it reminds you of his pastimes or his qualities. Now, similarly, the descriptions in Bhagavatam always remind you about different things about Krishna. They're udipanas, reminding you about Krishna. The prefix Srimad, or Srimad in combination, in the name of Bhagavatam is not merely a pro forma honorific title, like Shri or Sriman, appended without any special meaning to the name of anyone and everyone. Srimat is a significant adjective, specially describing the text as powerful and enchanting, with the suffix mat expressing eternal possession of Shri. It furthermore is directly connected with Bhagavatam in a compound construction. Otherwise, if Srimad were considered a separate word and the suffix matup were allowed to indicate temporary possession, Srimad Bhagavate Mahamudi Krite would be read as meaning when the Bhagavatam has been made Srimad by the great sage. But that would violate the stylistic rules of Sanskrit by a verbal predicate coming before the subject. Because Bhagavate Srimad is taken then as the predicate adjective. Bhagavatam becomes Srimad. But then you have the predicate before the subject, which is stylistically bad. It makes things confusing. Okay. So Srimad is not a separate adjective, it's part of the name. The name is Srimad Bhagavatam. I don't know if Srimad Bhagavatam is the official title, I don't know. But Srimad Bhagavatam is the title. Yeah. Well, we don't, on the cover of our book, we say Bhagavad Gita as it is, not Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is. Yes? Ah, microphone.
Then the Srimad Bhagavad Gita now is
Yeah, but Srimad, and Srimad can be added to any name. They're not necessarily part of the name. In this case, Srimad is part of the name. Yeah, because it's out of respect we add a Sri if there isn't one in the name already. Sri Jiva Goswami, as far as I understand, his name is Sri Jiva, not just Jiva. That's part of his name, that Sri. But Sri Rupa, his name is Rupa, and we add the Sri out of respect.
Sri is part of his name?
I think it's part of his name. I'm not sure, but it seems like that. Sri Jiva Gopala Bhatta Bhattasa Raghunath. So the Sri is added there with Jiva. It seems to be part of his name. Okay, we're going over time, but go ahead. Which one? The grammatical operation or the stylistic problem? Which one?
Srimad is how it is. I understand this is an adjective, but how it can be a part of the.
Well, see, the adjective can be connected, adjectives can be used two ways, connected to a noun or connected to the verb. If the verb is be, then it can be the predicate adjective. So, if it's the predicate adjective, then that adjective belongs to the predicate. It's the main part of the predicate, because the verb is only is. But if it goes with the noun, it's part of the subject. It's a logical difference. And you got a problem when you let the adjective be a separate predicate adjective, and you say it first, then you're committing a stylistic error of saying the predicate before the subject. Sometimes that rule is broken, but only by expert poets who accomplish something by breaking the minor rule. But otherwise, it's a flaw. It's confusing to the readers to, before you define what you're talking about, to say what you say something about it. What kind of compound? No. It's a sati saptami. When the Bhagavatam has been made by the Mahamuni. It's a saptami because there's a sati. You know, the word sati is implied there. Parsha. You understand? Blockative absolute. Yeah, the krite is taken as the verb there. No, Mahamuni is the subject, and then Srimad is taken to be the predicate. Okay. So and the verb, or Srimate krite, when it has been made opulent. Krite is the verb in both cases, but here we take Srimad and move it over to the predicate side. When the Mahamuni has made the Bhagavatam opulent. The other way is when the Mahamuni has made the Bhagavatam, when the Mahamuni has made the opulent Bhagavatam, then opulent belongs to the subject. Not to the subject really, it's the object. But it belongs to the noun, not to the verb. So there's the error of saying the predicate before the subject is not committed there. Well, that's the logic, the logical order when you take it as the predicate adjective, because it belongs in the predicate. So it should come theoretically, logically, it comes after the verb, but it's the predicate. Subject, verb, predicate. Well, actually, in Sanskrit, verbs often come at the end of the predicate, not at the beginning. It's typical in Sanskrit the verb be at the very end. The object comes after the verb. But anyway, in Sanskrit, the word order is very free. You can invert things and move them around, but you understand the normal logical order. About the error?
Yeah.
Well, it's not from grammar, it's from Kavya Shastra. In Kavya Shastra, it's listed as a dosha. It's a fault in poetry to mention the subject, the predicate before the subject. No, there's no error. It's not a grammatical error. It's a stylistic error. Because it creates confusion. It makes it hard to understand. Then the reader has to guess what the subject is. Well, yeah, having done this and that and that and that, Jiva Goswami then did this. You say 20 things that Jiva Goswami did, and then you only mention his name after that whole list. You know, all these subordinate verbs, put them first, and then the subject, and then the main verb. That's very confusing. It's bad style. If I was the English editor, I'd make you put the subject first. So before you have a three-line huge sentence, and you only introduce a sentence, three lines down, you should have the subject in the very beginning so the reader knows who you're talking about. The thing is, you know who you're talking about, And you think the reader knows mental telepathy, and you know, but you have to help the reader by telling the subject in the beginning. Even though you know already what it is, but the reader doesn't know. So therefore state the subject at the beginning of your sentence, in English too. There's a flow. We have all these gerund clauses, and then we only say the subject after all the clauses, before the main clause. That's stylistically bad. Because you're not defining who the subject is until too late, until the reader's totally disoriented.
So Sri Rama and Sri Vishnu
Puran,
that is also
a
mistake?
No, I think not in general, not in general. The word Sri is added to any name of the book. Yes. Yeah, so in many cases it's not part of the name, in most cases.
It's adjective?
Just an adjective, yeah. A respectful adjective.
So adjective can come before.
If an adjective is modifying the noun directly, then there's no problem. It's when you make the adjective the predicate adjective that, you understand?
Yeah.
That you can have a flaw that you've stated before the subject. If the adjective is not part of the predicate, no problem. If it's connected with the subject, then you can say it before, because you're still inside the subject. But when you let the adjective go outside the subject, be part of the predicate, then you have to be careful whether you put it first.
So the Sri Ramayana is the adjective of the noun.
Even if it's not, yeah, it's an adjective, but it's a separate adjective, it's a separate word. But when you have Srimate Kwite, then it sounds like it's actually a predicate. It can sound like the predicate, and it can be misunderstood. Yeah, we're getting late.
Just one question about Srimad Bhagavatam. So, as you have this quotation from Guru Purana, and then also it says that the commentary of Shri Chaitanya Swami says, does it mean that he will become a commentary of Shri Chaitanya Swami from Guru Purana, if you have a Bhagavatam and Vishnu Purana? Or is it
Vishnu Purana?
Yeah, we have to read those commentaries.
Yes, Shri Chaitanya Swami has done a complete commentary on Vishnu Purana.
Yeah.
And Jiva Goswami quotes from it fairly often in the Siddharthas.
But in this case,
no. No, I think there's. I'm not sure. I don't have it in front of me. It's close to the computer. Sri Swami may quote it. Oh, boy. Okay, let me check when I get back to my room. I'll take a look. I just shut the computer down. Let's stop it now. Om Glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Hi. Hare Krishna.